Welcome to the Council of Better Business Bureaus podcast, Better Business, Better Series, where we will explore top-of-mind topics with business and industry leaders to understand the leading trends and innovations that continue to push the envelope in today's marketplace.
For the Better Business, Better Series podcast, I'm Will Johnson. On today's episode, we're asking the question, what is the benefit of diversity, inclusion, and engagement to your organization and employees? Diversity and inclusion are often highlighted when it comes to running a successful business, but what do these terms really mean, and how can you make certain you as a business owner or leader are really thinking about and implementing strategies that focus on diversity and inclusion? Joining us today is clinical psychologist Dr. Vanessa Weaver. In 1990, she formed Alignment Strategies, one of the country's first independent organizations to focus on diversity as a business driver. Her clients include P&G, Johnson & Johnson, Kellogg's, KPMG, American Express, and Con Edison Utility, to name a few, right? Have I got that right?
You have them correct.
Okay. All right. So thank you for being here, first of all.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
Yeah, well, it's a really good topic for our podcast and our show, and talking about something that's so important. And you've been in this game for a while now.
Yes, absolutely.
So let's start. We all have a sense of what it might mean to have a diverse workplace, and you hear that word a lot these days. It's in the news. There's some news stories this week going on around some big companies and diversity and people saying one thing or another. But I want to start with this question. In your work, what is diversity and inclusion? Define those terms.
Well, that's a really good question, because oftentimes people get confused about it. But diversity speaks to the multiple identities we have, all of those differences that we bring with us into the workplace. So it could speak to our age, our gender, our race, our ethnicity, where we're from, our religion. So it really speaks to what makes us unique and what we call the multiple identities. Inclusion, which you talk about, they used to talk about diversity and inclusion together. So inclusion speaks to how do we leverage or use all of those identities to drive a mission or achieve a business objective in an organization. So, for example, you know, I'm a multicultural, I'm African-American female. And so that I bring in several identities when I come in. I'm female, I'm African-American, you know, I'm clearly over 50, you know, so there are elements that I bring in that influence how I interact and how others interact with me. And so that's what the inclusion part speaks.
So you could have a diverse organization or workforce, but not really have a good sense of the inclusion that's going on.
Exactly.
That might be an area that you want to make sure is included.
A good point, because a lot of times organizations really focus on diversity, but they haven't really thought about, then how do we get all of these folks to come in together and work effectively? And that's what my firm alignment strategy does. It really helps a company like Con Edison or Procter & Gamble or J&J figure out how do they bring this diverse talent together to help achieve the business objective.
So you already gave away your age, so I can say that you started doing this back
in give you my real age. I was over 50.
A frame. All right, you're right. That's true, and I'm not going to do it. So you started doing working with companies in the 70s and 80s, right? Talking about this topic. So here we are many years later. What were the challenges and what were those discussions like when you first started talking to business leaders?
When we first started looking at diversity, it wasn't even called diversity in the late 70s, early 80s. They called it affirmative action, equal opportunity, and then it evolved to multiculturalism, and then from multiculturalism, it evolved to diversity.
And no doubt we'll have another term.
And we'll have another term, right. But diversity has hung around now for the last 20 or so years, so it's
maybe
been the longest standing.
Yeah.
And one reason for that is that early on, when we talked about EEO or affirmative action or thought about diversity, it was all about legally, what's the legal mandate that you had to address and what was morally right to do. And as organizations develop more expertise or more experiences with diversity, they began to see that diversity really made a lot of sense in terms of how could they leverage all these diverse talents to really drive a business result.
So what was the legal mandate back, say, in the 70s?
I mean, it was the affirmative action requirement of the government that you had to have a certain number of people that represented race and gender. You know, we used to call them quotas, and people hated that. If you were on the other side, you know, for someone like me, there was some benefit in terms of opening up the organization and opportunities. For example, my parents never would have had that opportunity. But it developed a kind of negative stigma. And so people began to think of anything that any effort to bring in people that have differences was really about a legal mandate, a legal quota. But smart businesses like a P&G or like an American Express began to figure out that, you know, when you have diverse people who have diverse perspectives, you know, they bring a uniqueness to the business. And when you figure out how to make that work, it really generates solutions to the business that they never might not have thought about when everybody was just one race, one ethnicity. And there's a lot of research out there, Ted, that confirms that. For example, McKinsey did a recent study a couple of years ago, and they found out that organizations that had diverse teams with women, with multicultural individuals, with white males, produce results that were substantially more than an organization that had only white males, or an organization that had only blacks, or an organization that had only Latinas. And so the data began to support and validate how important it is. But also, if you think about the marketplace, you know, we're in a global economy. And so it's not just U.S.-centric anymore. I mean, we're doing work all over the world.
Sure.
So how do you incorporate and include those different needs that customers and consumers have in terms of your product innovation, how you deliver a service or whatever? So it really has really created a much more compelling, what we call value proposition, for organizations to think about and consider in doing this.
So it seems like a no-brainer, but we've come a long way, and there was certainly a time, and still in parts of the world and many companies, the understanding of diversity might not be there. But the idea that you're having a lot of different people from different walks of life and backgrounds and ethnicities and gender looking at a situation or problem or working with a company makes a whole lot of sense.
Exactly. And if you think about innovation, you know, really innovation is what allows the company to remain competitive and to thrive into the future. The studies also show that diverse teams are much more innovative in terms of their approach to an issue or even generating a new product. And so it really has a real strong business tie-in, and really one that's essential. And when you think about U.S. businesses, our strength is really our diversity, our ability to have diverse people from all walks of life, ethnicities, or multiple identities come together to solve an issue. When we do work with our clients, when Alignment Strategies do work with our clients, we pull together what we call diverse capstone teams. And these teams outperform the traditional team that organizations would have pulled together. In fact, we just did some work with one of our clients, and one of the teams solved a problem that the organization has been trying to solve for 10 years. And not only did they solve it in less than 6 months, but they generated like $10 million in cost savings.
And that's with a team that's more diverse.
That was diverse.
And
when I say diverse, I mean, we had people there who were from different functions in an organization that never would have worked together.
Age range.
So different age ranges, different genders and ethnicities. But the important element, too, is that we brought together people who had different work styles, who had different ways of approaching an issue. So when we talk about diversity, it's more than just what we call the physical aspect of diversity, but it's how you think about an issue. It's about how do you bring the kind of expertise maybe you've cultivated 5, 10, 15 years, 20 years for some, and bring that together to generate.
And that speaks to not just diversity, like you say, the physical attributes. You're a 25-year-old black male.
Right.
But you're also an individual, and the diversity of individualism, if I may, sort of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And when you think of individuals, it speaks to how are you wired. I mean, how do you approach a particular problem? How do you problem solve, and how do you bring all of that together? But you raise an interesting point. With even all of the progress that we've had in the diversity, we're still struggling with some of the fundamental issues around diversity. I was just listening to the news this morning, and there were three stories on sexual harassment in the workplace. One that some women who work for a hotel in New York, the Plaza, they have a class action suit on harassment. There was also a story that 60 women at Google are now filing a class action suit at Google. You know, we had the Taylor Swift discussion where she was, you know, complaining about a DJ or whatever,
yep,
groping her. And she's there fighting for, not so much, she's only filing for a dollar or something like that. So she's not trying to make any money. But the point is that there are certain things you don't do. So with all of the progress that we've made, there are still some fundamental issues that people are still struggling with around diversity. And if you look at EEOC complaints, those complaints that have been most successful have been filed by people who are older.
And what does that show you?
Because it says that in the workplace, individuals who are 50 and over are often overlooked or kind of marginalized.
So there's an age. There's a lot of age discrimination.
Age discrimination. Those complaints are really, really being much more successful.
I was going to say, if anything, maybe they're more than ever, they're willing to speak up and talk about it. And
exactly.
It's highlighted.
Yeah, because many of them have invested a lifetime
right. In
cultivating a skill or having a relationship with an organization. And all of a sudden, you become less important, less less valuable because you're not of a certain age group. And then you have millennials who are new in the workforce who have incredible ideas and willingness to contribute. And I can't even tell you what the millennials do for us in our company.
Well,
I can say we've had, they're phenomenal.
We've had some interesting interviews about just millennials in our show. And the differences between, you know, understanding what those differences are, understanding that they are very, the things we've talked about, mission-driven and like to work as part of groups.
Yeah.
And understanding those differences is what can really help.
Exactly, versus relegating them to some stereotypes or assumptions that they're not committed.
Exactly. All right, so let's start. You've talked a little bit about what you do, but talk about specifically what you go in. You go into a workplace and you work with business leaders to tackle bringing more diversity and inclusion into the workplace. Can you share some success stories about some of the clients you've worked with over the years?
You know, our company, Alignment Strategies, has had tremendous successes. I mean, we're renowned for our ability to customize an intervention. So, for example, one of our clients recently came to us and they said, we're really struggling with how to ensure that we keep Latina and African American associates in our organization, and they're leaving us quicker at the 2-year period than we want. And so our role is to go in and create an intervention, a way to kind of intervene in that organization, a system to really help them retain that talent, but not only retain the talent, but to increase the engagement of that talent and also their success in the organization. We usually are very effective in reducing turnover by 60%. In the first 18 months.
And
if you think about the cost of turnover, you know, in an organization, you know, for example, if a client pays a salary of $100,000 and you have overhead costs and training costs and all that, the first year cost for that person might be $150,000.
Yeah.
And so if you only keep that person for 2 years, most of the time organizations don't really benefit from that person being fully trained until about 2 years. So if you lose them before 2 years, you haven't had a return on your investment.
Exactly.
And if you multiply that 150,000 times 30 people, then you're talking about quite a bit of money.
So when you show that to the bean counters, you know, the guys, the men and women, if you will, who are looking at the money and the value proposition,
right.
It sounds like what your job is not just to say, hey, you know, we've got diversity, we've got inclusion, this is all starting to happen. What are the results?
Right. What is the impact on the business? I started in P&G and they would say to me, no matter what you do in this diversity space, you have to tell us what is the bottom line impact on our business. How does it drive value to the shareholder? How does it make us a much more inclusive organization, a much more effective? And so, and it's not really the bean counters, it's really the business leaders who are responsible for looking at understanding how do they drive the strategy in their organization to deliver more business results. And they are responsible to look at what are those factors that they need to mitigate or handle to not, you know, under-deliver.
I take your point. So the people often in the finance division or working with those numbers are getting the direction from the people at the top who are saying, this is how we want the culture of this company
to be. And if the people at the top are not in line or committed, then it's very difficult to have a sustainable and impactful diversity effort.
And it's not just the money, but when culture evolves, business prospers.
Exactly. And when it stagnates, you have tremendous business challenges. And I mean, if you look at some of the companies that are no longer here with us, if you think about the companies that were here with us 10 years ago and those who weren't, you just look at their diversity profile and it begins to tell you something about how that culture was able or not able to innovate.
Over your career then, as you look back, certainly you've had a lot of success working with companies. How do you feel today? How is the diversity and inclusion in American business today compared to...
I'm excited about it. Yeah. And even in this political climate, it's just been unbelievable. It's been really a plus for diversity in many ways. And what do I mean by that? Just recently, we had 300 CEOs who came together and they signed a pledge recommitting their organization to diversity and inclusion. And they said, we're going to create environments where we can have much more inclusive conversations, particularly on tough topics such as race and sexual orientation. They also said that there are some best practices that some of us are involved in that are working for us. We're not going to any longer just keep them to ourselves. We're going to share those out. So now they have a website that anybody could go to and see what are some of the best practices. And then they're going to also focus on really understanding unconscious bias and how does that impact organizations.
And that's a whole nother topic, the study of unconscious
bias. That's a whole nother topic. So I'm really excited and challenged and really motivated on what's really possible and what's on the trajectory on the horizon.
Well, thank you so much for being here today.
We
appreciate you can come back
this.
In sometime.
I would
we'll
love
talk about...
to. I mean, this is part of my DNA. I just love what we do, and I have a passion for this work because it makes sense for the people, it makes sense for business, and it makes sense for our society.
Absolutely. I'd like to thank clinical psychologist and CEO of Alignment Strategies, Dr. Vanessa Weaver, for joining us today. You can learn more about Dr. Weaver at alignmentstrategies.com. And if you'd like to learn more about the Better Business Bureau, visit us at bbb.org. For the Better Business, Better Series podcast, I'm Will Johnson.
You just enjoyed Better Business, Better Series podcast. Be sure to tune in next month for a brand new episode. To learn more about our other shows, visit betterbusiness.blueberry.com. That's betterbusiness.blueberry.com and subscribe. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the Better Business Bureau, Council of Better Business Bureaus, or program affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Blueberry's Terms of Service.